Monsignor Paddy O'Day, a priest from our diocese who's dead now, God rest him, used to tell a lovely story about a priest who was waxing lyrical about a man whose funeral he was conducting, saying what a wonderful man he was, a pillar of the church, a devoted husband and father, renowned for his good temper, and a friend to all in need. At which point, his widow said to one of the children, "Get you up there and check the name on that coffin." I suppose it's a good story, really, but more often than not, it's the relatives who say how wonderful the deceased was. He never did anybody any harm. She would do anything for anyone. She was perfect. When deep down, of course, we all know that nobody's perfect and that we all need forgiveness for something. St. John says, for example, if we claim we have not sinned, we're actually calling God a liar, which is tantamount to saying, okay, so Jesus died to take away the sins of the world, but he didn't need to do it for me. I'm perfect. And that's why in the Catholic Church, a Requiem Mass is primarily to ask God's forgiveness so that the dead person may rest in peace. It's not a memorial service or a celebration of the life of. That comes later in the poem or at the reception when he comes alive again in the stories that we all tell about him. As I left the church after Mass on Friday, I happened to be singing a little song to myself. I thought I had switched the mic off, but I hadn't, as Viv pointed out. When I checked the mic, the green light was indeed still on, but in the full daylight outside, it's very hard to see. And that made me think, you know, that different lights give off different powers in the dark, but in daylight, comparisons are meaningless. Similarly, in the shady dealings of the world, we may look to ourselves pretty good, shining lights even compared to others. But when we stand in the brilliance of God's light, our imperfections become a bit more obvious, so that comparison with others becomes irrelevant. As I said at the beginning, you know, we all need forgiveness from God, but as the scriptures demand today, it's very clear that we must also bestow forgiveness. However, if you've been badly hurt or suffered huge injustice from someone, that's not so easy to do as it sounds. And part of the trouble is because from a human perspective, God's forgiveness is extravagant to the point of being ridiculous. Today's parable shows the unforgiving servant owing the equivalent of the 800 million euros you'd need to buy Lionel Messi, which he could never pay back. What does God do? Ask him to pay in installments, give him more time? Neither. He simply writes off the whole debt. Unbelievable. How could I be expected to ever forgive like that? Well, probably I couldn't. But there's a clue in the opening words of the parable of how to at least try, which are, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to. That's how Jesus starts his parable. What he's doing by that is he's preparing his followers to live by God's rules, not by man's. Peter, just before this incident, has been given the power to forgive sins, to bind and loose. And I think he's trying to appear magnanimous when he asks, how often should we forgive? What, up to 7 times do you think would be reasonable, Lord? But Jesus makes it very clear that God never stops loving the sinner, and he offers as many fresh starts as are needed, even 70 times 7. The danger of that, of course, is that people might think that if he's going to forgive me anyway, the rules don't matter, which is a little bit like today's situation, that if our government gets away with breaking international law and there's no penalty for Donald Cummings breaking the lockdown, why should we ordinary citizens keep the law? To think that, though, would be to miss the point. Forgiveness, unlike expediency, implies a fresh start. That's what it's for. It's not a license to do what you like. And when we look back over our lives, well, when I look back over my life anyway, I know there are things I have done or failed to do when I had the chance, which I regret. But I can't undo them. So the key to see is to see myself as a forgiven person, to accept that our debts really are cancelled, wiped out as if they never existed, by the blood of Christ poured out for the forgiveness of sins. And by realizing that and seeing how God continues to put his faith in me in spite of everything, forever offering me a fresh start, I I might just learn to look at the people who've hurt me in a different way, to understand that they have their problems too, and to pray for the grace to forgive them. It may be hard, of course, to forget the hurt they've caused, but forgiveness is not really so much about forgetting as about remembering, but without bitterness. And that causes a change of heart, very much in line with today's psalm, which is, "The Lord is compassion and love, slow to anger, rich in mercy."